Chapter 21. Embers and Ash. Perrin opened his eyes and found himself hanging in the air. He felt a spike of terror floundering in the sky. Black clouds boiled overhead, dark and ominous. Below, a plain of wild brown grasses rolled in the wind, no signs of humans. No tents, no roads, not even any footprints. Perrin wasn't falling. He just hung there. He waved his arms reflexively as if to swim, panicking as his mind tried to make sense of the disorientation. The wolf dream, he thought. I'm in the wolf dream. I went to sleep hoping to come here. He forced himself to breathe in and out and still his flailing, though it was difficult to be calm while hanging hundreds of feet up in the sky. Suddenly, a gray-furred form shot past him, leaping through the air. The wolf soared down to the field below, landing easily.
Hopper! Jump down, young bull. Jump. It is safe.
As always, the sending from the wolf came as a mixture of scents and images. Perrin was getting better and better at interpreting those. The soft earth as a representation of the ground, rushing wind as an image of jumping, the scent of relaxation and calmness, to indicate there was no need to fear.
But how?
Times before, you always rushed ahead, like a pup newly weaned. Jump. Jump down.
Far below, Hopper sat on his haunches in the field, grinning up at Perrin. Perrin ground his teeth and muttered a curse or two for stubborn wolves. It seemed to him that the dead ones were particularly bullheaded, though Hopper did have a point. Perrin had leaped before in this place, if never from the sky itself. He took a deep breath, then closed his eyes and imagined himself jumping. Air rushed around him in a sudden burst, but then his feet hit soft ground. He opened his eyes. A large gray wolf, scarred from many fights, was sitting on the ground beside him, and wild millet spread out in a broad plain around him, heavily mixed with stands of long, thin grasses that reached high in the air. Scratchy stalks rubbed against Perrin's arms in the wind, making him itch. The grasses smelled too dry, like cut hay left in a barn over the winter. Some things were transitory here in the wolf dream. Leaves lay in a pile by his feet at one moment, but then were gone the next. Everything smelled just faintly stale, as if it weren't quite there. He looked up. The sky was stormy. Normally, clouds in this place were as transitory as other things. It could be completely overcast, then in a blink it would suddenly be clear. This time, those dark storm clouds remained. They boiled, spun, and shot lines of lightning between different thunderheads. Yet the lightning never struck the ground, and it made no noise. The plain was oddly silent. The clouds shrouded the entire sky, ominous, and they did not leave.
The last hunt comes.
Hopper looked up at the sky.
We will run together then, unless we sleep instead.
Sleep, Perrin said. What of the last hunt?
It comes, Hopper agreed.
If Shadow Killer falls to the storm, all will sleep forever. If he lives, then we will hunt together, you and us.
Perrin rubbed his chin, trying to sort through the sending of images, smells, sounds, feelings. It made little sense to him. But, well, he was here now. He'd wanted to come, and he'd decided that he'd get some answers from Hopper if he could. It was good to see Hopper again.
Run, Hopper sent.
His sending was not alarmed. It was an offer. Let us run together. Perrin nodded and began to jog through the grasses. Hopper loped beside him, sending amusement.
Two legs, young bull? Two legs are slow.
That sending was an image of men stumbling over themselves, tripping because of their elongated, silly legs. Perrin hesitated.
I have to keep control, Hopper, he said. When I let the wolf take control, well, I do dangerous things.
The wolf cocked his head, trotting beside Perrin across the grassy field. The stalks crunched and scraped as the two of them passed through, finding a small game trail, turning along it.
Run, Hopper urged, obviously confused at Perrin's reluctance.
I can't, Perrin said, stopping.
Hopper turned and took a few bounds back to him. He smelled confused.
Hopper, I frighten myself, Perrin said, when I lose control. The first time it happened to me was just after I met the wolves. You need to help me understand.
Hopper simply continued to stare at him, tongue hanging out the front of his mouth just slightly, jaws parted.
Why am I doing this? Perrin thought, shaking his head. Wolves didn't think like men. What did it matter what Hopper thought of it all? We will hunt together, Hopper sent.
What if I don't want to hunt with you? Perrin said.
Saying the words made his heart twist.
He did like this place, the wolf dream, dangerous though it could be. There were wonderful things about what had happened to him since leaving the Two Rivers. But he couldn't continue to lose control. He had to find a balance.
Throwing away the axe had made a difference. The axe and the hammer were different weapons. One could be used only for killing, while the other gave him a choice. But he had to make good on that choice. He had to control himself. And the first step seemed to be learning to control the wolf within him.
Run with me, young bull, Hopper sent. Forget these thoughts. Run like a wolf.
I can't, Perrin replied.
He turned, scanning the plains.
But I need to know this place, Hopper. I need to learn how to use it, control it.
Men, Hopper thought, sending the smells of dismissiveness and anger. Control. Always control.
I want you to teach me, Perrin said, turning back to the wolf. I want to master this place. Will you show me how?
Hopper sat back on his haunches.
Fine, Perrin said. I will search out other wolves who will.
He turned, striking down the game trail. He didn't recognize this place, but he'd learned that the wolf dream was unpredictable. This meadow, with the waist-high grass and its stands of yew, could be anywhere. Where would he find wolves? He quested out with his mind and found that it was much more difficult to do here.
You don't want to run, but you look for wolves. Why are you so difficult, cub?
Hopper sat in front of him in the grass. Perrin grumbled, then took a leap that launched him through the air 100 yards. He landed with his foot falling to the grass as if it had been a normal step. And there Hopper was ahead of him. Perrin hadn't seen the wolf leap. He had been in one place and now in another. Perrin gritted his teeth, questing out again, for other wolves. He felt something distant. He needed to push harder. He concentrated, drew more strength into himself somehow, and managed to push his mind farther.
This is dangerous, young bull, Hopper sent. You come here too strongly. You will die.
You always say that, Perrin replied. Tell me what I want to know. Show me how to learn.
Stubborn pup, Hopper sent. Return when you aren't determined to poke your snout into a fire asp's den.
With that, something slammed against Perrin, a weight against his mind. Everything vanished, and he was tossed, like a leaf before a storm, out of the wolf dream.
Fael felt her husband stir next to her as he slept. She glanced at him in the dark room. Though she lay beside him on the pallet, she hadn't been sleeping. She'd been waiting, listening to his breaths. He turned onto his back, muttering drowsily. Of all the nights for him to be restless, she thought with annoyance. They were a week out of Malden. The refugees had made camp, or, well, camps, near a waterway that led straight to the Johanna Road, which was only a short distance away. Things had gone smoothly these last few days, though Perrin had judged the Ashaman too tired still to make gateways. She had spent the evening with her husband, reminding him of several important reasons why he'd married her in the first place. He'd certainly been enthusiastic, though there was that odd edge to his eyes. Not a dangerous edge, just a sorrowful one. He had grown haunted while they were apart. She could understand that. She had a few ghosts of her own. One could not expect everything to remain the same, and she could tell that he still loved her. Loved her fiercely. That was enough, and so she didn't worry on it further. But she was planning an argument that would pull his secrets from him. She would wait a few more days for that. It was good to remind a husband that one would not sit content with everything he did, but it wouldn't do to make him think she was unappreciative to have him back. Quite the opposite. She smiled, rolling over and laying her hand on his chest, furred with hair, her head on his bare shoulder. She loved this burly, tumbling avalanche of a man. Being back with him was sweeter even than the victory of her escape from the Shido. His eyes fluttered open and she sighed. Love him or not, she wished he'd remain asleep this night. Hadn't she tired him out enough? He looked at her. His golden eyes seemed to glow just faintly in the darkness, though she knew it was a trick of the light. Then he pulled her a little closer.
I didn't sleep with Berylaine, he said, voice gruff. No matter what the rumors say.
Dear, sweet, blunt Perrin. I know you didn't, she said consolingly. She'd heard the rumors. Virtually every woman she'd talked to in the camp, from Aes Sedai to servant, had pretended she was trying to hold her tongue, yet spilled the same news. Perrin, spending a night in the first of Mayenne's tent.
No, really,
Perrin said, a pleading tone entering his voice.
I didn't, Fael, please.
I said I believed you.
You sounded, I don't know, Burnett woman, you sounded jealous.
Would he never learn? Perrin, she said flatly. It took me the better part of a year, not to mention considerable trouble, to seduce you. And then it only worked because there was a marriage involved. Berylaine hasn't the skill to handle you. He reached his right hand up, scratching his beard, seeming confused. Then he just smiled. Besides, she added, snuggling closer, you spoke the words, and I trust you.
So you're not jealous?
Of course I am, she said, swatting his chest. Perrin, haven't I explained this? A husband needs to know his wife is jealous. Otherwise he won't realize how much she cares for him. You guard that which you find most precious. Honestly, if you keep making me spell things out like this, then I won't have any secrets left. He snorted softly at that last comment.
I doubt that's possible.
He grew quiet, and she closed her eyes, hoping he'd go back to sleep. Outside the tent, she could hear the distant voices of guards chatting on patrol, and the sound of one of the farriers, Jerisid, Imin, or Falton, working late into the night, pounding out a shoe or nail to ready one of the horses for the next day's march. It was good to hear that sound again. The Aiel were useless when it came to horses, and the Shido had either released the ones they captured or turned them into workhorses. She had seen many fine saddle mares pulling carts during her days in Malden. Should it feel strange to be back? She had spent less than 2 months as a captive, but it had seemed like years. Years spent running errands for Savannah, being punished arbitrarily. But that time had not broken her. Strangely, she'd felt more like a noblewoman during those days than she had before. It was as if she hadn't quite understood what it was to be a lady until Malden. Oh, she'd had her share of victories. Chafail, the people of the Two Rivers, Aleandra and Perrin's camp members. She'd put her training to use, helping Perrin learn to be a leader. All of this had been important, had required her to use what her mother and father had trained her to be. But Malden had opened her eyes. There she had found people who had needed her more than she'd ever been needed before. Beneath Savannah's cruel dictatorship, there'd been no time for games, no room for mistakes. She had been humiliated, beaten, and nearly killed. And that had given her a true understanding of what it was to be a liege lady. She actually felt a stab of guilt for the times she had lorded over Perrin, trying to force him, or others, to bend to her will. Being a noblewoman meant going first. It meant being beaten so others were not. It meant sacrificing, risking death, to protect those who depended upon you. No, it didn't feel strange to be back, for she'd taken Malden, the parts that mattered, with her. Hundreds had sworn allegiance to her among the Gai Shine, and she had saved them. She had done it through Perrin, but she had made plans, and one way or another she would have escaped and brought back an army to free those who had sworn to her. There had been costs, but she would deal with those later tonight, light willing. She opened an eye and peeked at Perrin. He seemed to be sleeping, but was his breath even? She slipped her arm free.
"I don't care what happened to you," he said.
She sighed. "No, not asleep." "What happened to me?" she asked with confusion. He opened his eyes, staring up at the tent.
"The Shido. The man who was with you when I saved you. Whatever he did. Whatever you did to survive. It's all right."
Was that what was bothering him?
Light.
"You big ox," she said, thumping a fist on his chest, causing him to grunt. "What are you saying? That it would be all right for me to be unfaithful? Just after you were so concerned to tell me that you hadn't been?"
"What? No, it's different, Fael. You were a prisoner and—"
"And I can't care for myself?" "You are an ox. No one touched me. They're Aiel. You know they wouldn't dare harm a Gai Shine." It wasn't quite true. Women had often been abused in the Shido camp, for the Shido had stopped acting like Aiel. But there had been others in the camp, Aiel who hadn't been Shido, men who had refused to accept Rand as their Karakarn, but who also had trouble accepting Shido authority. The Brotherless had been men of honor, though they'd called themselves cast off. They had been the only ones in Malden who had maintained the old ways. When the Gai Shine women had started to be in danger, the Brotherless had chosen and protected those they could. They hadn't asked anything for their efforts. Well, that wasn't true. They had asked for much, but had demanded nothing. Roland had always been an Aiel to her in action, if not in word. But like Massima's death, her relationship with Roland was not something Perrin needed to know about. She had never so much as kissed Roland, but she had used his desire for her as an advantage, and she suspected that he'd known what she was doing. Perrin had killed Roland. That was another reason that her husband didn't need to know about the Brotherless man's kindness. It would tear Perrin apart inside if he knew what he'd done. Perrin relaxed, closing his eyes. He had changed during these 2 months, perhaps as much as she had. That was good. In the Borderlands, her people had a saying, "Only the Dark One stays the same." Men grew and progressed. The Shadow just remained as it was. Evil.
"We'll have to do some planning tomorrow," Perrin said, yawning. "Once gateways are available, we will have to decide whether to force the people to leave and decide who goes first. Has anyone discovered what happened to Massima?"
"Not that I know of," she said carefully. "But with so many of his possessions gone from his tent..."
"Massima doesn't care about possessions,"
Perrin mumbled quietly, eyes still closed.
"Though maybe he would have taken them to rebuild. I guess he might have run off, though it's strange that nobody knows where or how."
"He probably slipped away during the confusion after the battle."
"Probably,"
Perrin agreed.
"I wonder," he yawned, "I wonder what Rand will say. Massima was the point of this whole trip. I was to fetch him and bring him back. I guess I failed."
"You destroyed the men who were murdering and robbing in the dragon's name," Fael said, "and you cut out the heart of the Shido leadership, not to mention all you've learned about the Seanchan. I think the dragon will find that what you've accomplished here far outweighs not bringing Massima back."
"Maybe you're right,"
Perrin mumbled sleepily.
"Blasted colors. I don't want to watch you sleeping, Rand. What happened to your hand?"
like blinded fool, take better care of yourself. You're all we have. Last hunt coming.
She could barely make out that last part. Why was he talking about Rand's hand going hunting? Was he actually falling asleep this time? Sure enough, he soon started snoring softly. She smiled, shaking her head fondly. He was an ox sometimes, but he was her ox. She climbed off of the pallet and moved through their tent, pulling on a robe and tying its belt. A pair of sandals followed, and then she slipped out through the tent flaps. Arala and Lacille guarded there along with two maidens. The maidens nodded to her. They would keep her secret. Fael left the maiden guards but took Arala and Lacille with her as she walked out into the darkness. Arala was a dark-haired Tyran woman who was taller than most maidens, with a brusque way about her. Lacille was short, pale, and very slender, and she walked with a graceful sway. They were as different as women could get, perhaps, though their captivity had united them all. Both members of Chafail had been captured with her and gone to Malden as Gaishine. After traveling a short distance, they picked up two other maidens. Bane and Chiad had spoken with them lightly. They passed out of the camp, moving to a spot where a pair of willow trees stood side by side. There, Fael was met by a pair of women who still wore Gaishine white. Bane and Chiad were maidens themselves, first sisters, and dear to Fael. They were more loyal, even, than those who had sworn to her. Loyal to her, yet free of oaths to her. A contradiction only Aiel could pull off. Unlike Fael and the others, Bane and Chiad would not put off the white just because their captors had been defeated. They would wear the clothing for a year and a day. In fact, coming here this night, acknowledging their lives from before they had been taken, stretched what their honor would allow. However, they admitted that being Gaishine in the Shido camp had been anything but standard. Fael met them with a smile, but did not shame them by calling them by name or by using maiden hand talk. However, she couldn't keep herself from asking, "You are well?" as she accepted a small bundle from Chiad. Chiad was a beautiful woman with gray eyes and short, reddish-blonde hair hidden beneath the hood of her Gaishine robe. She grimaced at the question. "Gaul searched the entire Shido camp to find me, and reports say he defeated 12 Algai de Siswai with his spear. Perhaps I shall have to make a bridal wreath for him after all, once this is all through." Fael smiled. Chiad smiled back. He did not expect that one of the men he killed would turn out to be the one to whom Bane was Gaishine. I do not think Gaul is happy to have both of us serving him.
Foolish man.
Bane, the taller of the two, said.
Very like him, to not watch where he jabbed his spear. He couldn't kill the right man without accidentally slaying a few others.
Both women chuckled. Fael smiled and nodded. Aiel humor was beyond her. "Thank you very much for fetching these," she said, holding up the small cloth-wrapped bundle. "It was nothing," Chiad said. "There were too many hands working that day, so it was easy. Aleandra Maritha Kigarin already waits for you at the trees. We should return to the camp."
"Yes," Bane added. "Perhaps Gaul would like his back rubbed again, or water fetched for him. He grows so angry when we ask. But Gaishine gain honor only through service. What else are we to do?"
The women laughed again, and Fael shook her head as they ran back toward the camp, white robes swishing. She cringed at the thought of having to wear such clothing again, if only because it made her think about her days of service to Savannah. Lanky Arala and graceful Lacille joined her at the base of the two willows. The maiden guards stayed behind, watching from afar. A third maiden joined those two, moving out of the shadows, likely sent by Bane and Chiad to protect Aleandra. Fael found the dark-haired queen standing at the base of the trees, looking like a lady again in a rich red gown with golden chains lacing her hair. It was an extravagant display, as if she were determined to disprove the days she'd spent acting as a servant. Aleandra's gown made Fail more aware of her simple robe, but there wasn't much she could have done without waking Perrin. Arila and Lucille wore only the embroidered breeches and shirts common to those in Chaf Fail. Aleandra carried a small lantern with the shutters drawn, letting out only a crack of light that illuminated her youthful face, topped by dark hair. "Did they find anything?" she asked. "Please tell me that they did." She had always been impressively grounded for a queen, if somewhat demanding. Her time in Malden appeared to have tempered the latter feature. "Yes." Fail hefted the bundle. The four women huddled around her as she knelt on the ground, the tips of the short grass lit by the lantern, shining like tongues of flame. Fail unwrapped the bundle. The contents weren't anything extraordinary. A small handkerchief of yellow silk, a belt of worked leather which had a pattern of bird feathers pressed into its sides, a black veil, and a thin leather band with a stone tied at the center. "That belt belonged to Kinwin," Aleandra said, pointing to it. "I saw him wearing it before..." She trailed off, then knelt and picked it up. "The veil is that of a maiden," Arila said. "They're different?" Aleandra asked with surprise. "Of course they are," Arila said, picking up the veil. Fail had never met the maiden who had become Arila's protector, but the woman had fallen in the battle, though not as dramatically as Roland and the others. The piece of silk was Jordan's. Lucille hesitated, then took it in her hands, turning it over and revealing that there was a spot of blood on it. That left only the leather cord. Roland had worn it at his neck, on occasion, beneath his cut-in sore. Fail wondered what it had meant to him, and if there was any significance to the single bit of stone, a rough-cut chunk of turquoise. She picked it up, then glanced at Lucille. Surprisingly, the slender woman seemed to be crying. Because Lucille had gone so quickly to the hefty brotherless's bed, Fail had assumed that her relationship with him had been one of necessity, not affection. "Four people are dead," Fail said, mouth suddenly dry. She spoke formally, for that was the best way to keep the emotion from her voice. "They protected us, even cared for us. Though they were the enemy, we mourn them. Remember, though, that they were Aiel. For an Aiel, there are far worse ends than death in combat." The others nodded, but Lucille met Fail's eyes. For the two of them, it was different. When Perrin had barreled out of that alleyway, roaring in anger at seeing Fail and Lucille apparently being manhandled by Shido, many things had happened very quickly. In the fray, Fail had distracted Roland at just the right moment, making him hesitate. He'd done so out of concern for her, but that pause had allowed Perrin to kill him. Had Fail done it intentionally? She still didn't know. So much had been going through her mind, so many emotions at seeing Perrin. She'd cried out, and she could not decide if she'd been trying to distract Roland to let him die by Perrin's hand. For Lucille, there was no such wavering. Jordan had leapt in front of her, putting her behind him and raising his weapon against the intruder. She'd put a knife in his back, killing a man for the first time in her life. And it had been a man whose bed she'd shared. Fail had killed Kinwin, the other member of the Brotherless who had protected them. He wasn't the first man whose life she had taken, nor the first one she'd taken from behind, but he was the first man she'd killed who had seen her as a friend. There was nothing else that could have been done. Perrin had seen only Shido, and the Brotherless had seen only an invading enemy. That conflict could not have ended without Perrin or the Brotherless dead. No amount of screaming would have stopped any of the men. But that made it more tragic. Fail steeled herself to keep her eyes from tearing up like Lucille's. She hadn't loved Roland, and she was glad that Perrin was the one who had survived the conflict. But Roland had been an honorable man, and she felt dirtied, somehow, that his death had been her fault. This shouldn't have had to be, but it was. Her father had often spoken of situations like this, when you had to kill people you liked just because you met them on the wrong side of the battlefield. She'd never understood. If she had to go back and do it again, she would take the very same actions. She wouldn't be able to risk Perrin. Roland had had to die. But the world seemed a sadder place to her for the necessity of it. Lucille turned away, sniffling softly. Fael knelt, taking a small flask of oil from the bundle Chiad had left. She took the leather strap and pulled off the stone, then set the strap in the center of the cloth bundle. She poured the oil on it, then used a tinder stick, lit at the lantern, to set the strap afire. She watched it burn, tiny little flames of blue and green topped by orange. The scent of burning leather was shockingly similar to that of burning human flesh. The night was still, no wind to shake the flames, and so they danced freely. Aleandra doused the belt and put it onto the miniature fire. Arila did the same with the veil. Finally, Lucille added the handkerchief. She was still crying. This was all they could do. There hadn't been a way to see to the bodies in the chaos of leaving Malden. Chiad had said there was no dishonor in leaving them, but Fael had needed to do something. Some small way of honoring Roland and the others. "Dead by our hand," Fael said, "or simply dead from battle. These four showed us honor. As the Aiel would say, we have great toe to them. I don't think it can be repaid, but we can remember them. The brotherless and one maiden showed us kindness when they didn't need to. They kept their honor when others had abandoned it. If there is a redemption to be found for them and for us, this will be it." "There's a brotherless in Perrin's camp," Lucille said, eyes reflecting the flames of their pyre. "Niagan is his name. He is Gaishain to Sulin the maiden. I went to tell him of what the others did for us. He is a kind man." Fael closed her eyes. Lucille probably meant that she had gone to the bed of this Niagan. That wasn't forbidden of Gaishain. "You can't replace Joradin like that," she said, opening her eyes, "or undo what you did." "I know," Lucille said defensively. "But they were so full of humor, despite the terrible situation. There was something about them. Joradin wanted to take me back to the Threefold Land, make me his wife." "And you'd never have done it," Fael thought. "I know you wouldn't have. But now that he's dead, you realize the opportunity you lost." Well, who was she to chastise? Let Lucille do as she wished. If this Niagan was half the man that Roland or the others had been, then perhaps Lucille would do well with him. "Kinwin had only just started looking out for me," Aleandra said. "I know what he wished for, but he never demanded it. I think he was planning to leave the Shido, and would have helped us escape. Even if I turned him down, he would have helped us." "Marthea hated what the other Shido did," Arila said. "But she stayed with them for her clan. She died for that loyalty. There are worse things to die for." Fael watched the last embers of the miniature pyre flicker out. "I think Roland actually loved me," she said. And that was all. The four rose and returned to the camp. The past was a field of embers and ash, an old Saldaean proverb said, the remnants of the fire that was the present. Those embers blew away behind her, but she kept Roland's turquoise stone. Not for regret, but for remembrance.
Perrin lay awake in the still night, smelling the canvas of his tent and the unique scent of Fael. She wasn't there, though she had been recently. He'd dozed off, and now she was gone. Perhaps to the privy. He stared up in the darkness, trying to make sense of Hopper and the wolf dream. The more he thought about it, the more determined he grew. He would march to the last battle, and when he did, he wanted to be able to control the wolf inside of him. He wanted either to be free of all these people who followed him, or to learn how to accept their loyalty. He had some decisions to make. They wouldn't be easy, but he'd make them. A man had to do hard things. That was the way of life. That was what had gone wrong with the way he'd handled Fael's capture. Instead of making decisions, he'd avoided them. Master Luhan would have been disappointed in him. and that led Perrin to another decision, the hardest of all. He was going to have to let Fael ride into danger, perhaps risk her again. Was that a decision? Could he make such a decision? The mere thought of her in danger made him want to sick up, but he would have to do something. Three problems. He would face them, and he would decide. But he would consider them first, because that was what he did. A man was a fool to make decisions without thinking first. But the decision to face his problems brought him a measure of peace, and he rolled over and drifted back to sleep.